recognize tendencies and triggers in a type of tilt you wouldn't have immediately associated with your game. Barry's take.
Understanding your opponent's tilt. Another reason to familiarize yourself with all the types of tilt is to better understand your opponent's tilt. Although this book does not profess to be a traditional poker strategy book, understanding common mental game flaws and patterns adds another way to analyze your opponent's. You wouldn't want players at the table seeing a copy of your own tilt profile because they could use it to exploit you. Having a greater understanding of another player's mental game leaks can help you create an edge where few people can claim to have one.
General strategy for tilt. Building from the general model laid out in Chapter 4, the following strategy applies to all types of tilt. Within each section are specific strategies to help you break down each specific type of tilt even more. 1. Recognition. It's not enough just to be familiar with your pattern of tilt when you're away from the table. You have to be able to clearly recognize the signs that you're on tilt or heading that way in the actual moment. Otherwise, you can't gain control of it. For some players, these signs are too small or weak to stop them from tilting. Study your tilt profile as you would a poker concept, and build the skill of recognition. Only when you can recognize the signs that you're tilting while playing can you control it. 2. Preparation. Before each time you play poker, review your tilt profile, injecting logic statements, strategic reminders, and any other parts of your strategy so they're in the front of your mind. That way you'll be more likely to spot the early signs of tilt and thus more likely to take action before anger reaches your emotional threshold and begins to shut down your ability to think. 3. Performance. Make controlling tilt a priority. Keep an eye out for the signs of tilt and inject logic when you notice them. Also mark or make note of hands where frustration or anger shows up. That way you can easily gather more details about tilt after the session. 4. Evaluation. What you do after a session or tournament depends on the severity of your tilt. On a day when tilt is mild, focus your evaluation on the improvements you made with tilt. Pay attention to spots that previously would have tilted you, where instead you were able to remain in control. Analyze what you did to successfully manage tilt, and take note of any new signs. Review your mental hand history to reinforce the correction. On days when tilt is significant but not horrible, take notes soon after you're done playing. While the details of your tilt are still fresh in your mind, add any new details to your tilt profile about what pissed you off, the mistakes you made, or the signs that you were on tilt. Don't assume the details are always the same as the other times you tilted. Look for differences. At a minimum, if the details are the same, paying more attention to them increases the skill of recognition. Basically, you're writing step one of the mental hand history, and that alone can reduce anger. If you're objective enough after finishing step one, you'll speed up the process of resolution by going through the remaining 4 steps. When tilt is really bad, even though it may be the last thing that you want to do, taking notes can help you deal with tilt better in the future. Spew out what's in your head by productively venting. Yes, venting is a great thing, but players often do it solely to other players who don't want to hear it. Instead, by writing or venting to a friend first and then writing, you get the critical details about the cause of your tilt out of your head to a place where you can see them. Often players ignore these gold nuggets of insight because they don't even realize how valuable they are for solving tilt. By capturing them, you have the critical data to help you decode the cause of your tilt. Productive venting also allows your brain to relax, and players who do it regularly say that it helps them feel normal faster. Complete the remaining 4 steps of the mental hand history within the next few days. Client story. Liz, Rick James Biatch Herrera. Heads up no limit, up to 5,100.
I was pretty much your average grinder before I talked with Jared back in 2008. I had a decent win rate of 3 BBs per 100 playing 6 max no limit multi-tables, and was winning 5 BBs per 100 playing heads up. When I played online, I kept my gender secret because I wasn't interested in fame. I just wanted to be respected. That's where my poker name came from. It was such a macho name that nobody would ever think I was female. It's funny because I hear Phil Galfond chose OMG Clay Aiken so players would think he was a woman. The reason I wanted to talk with Jared was that I was tilting much more at heads up. Poker can be downright infuriating sometimes, and it makes you want to slam the hell out of your mouse. I always thought tilt was normal. I had a conversation with a respected 2+2 poster and coach who actually told me tilt was just part of the game. I would tilt 2 to 3 times in a session and assumed I just had to deal with it, until I read Jared's thread on Stocks Poker and decided to give him a try. Right away, he helped me to see how many types of tilt there are. He taught me how to identify them and got me to write down my own personal tilt triggers to determine what I would do and why I would do it. I would keep them written on a note card and focus on it while I was playing. When one of those triggers would show up, I'd remind myself that there was potential I might go on tilt, so I would do breathing exercises and stop and think for a minute. He also made me think about my signs of tilt, the things I would do when I was on tilt, like being overly aggressive, acting without thinking, and making bad bluffs. When I noticed these showing up, I definitely knew it was time to take a break. After doing this for several weeks, I eventually got to the point where I didn't even need to take a break. I could just take some deep breaths and just keep on playing. The fact that I had noticed them was enough to stop me from tilting. Really, the thing that helped me the most was the concept of the journal. When he first mentioned it, I thought it was lame, and I didn't want to do it. I just had an image of a teenager writing in a diary about her feelings. 6 months after fighting him on it, I gave it a shot, and wow, I was blown away and upset I hadn't done it much sooner. It helped me really understand what I needed to do. It created a map, in a sense, which really accelerated my learning process. Now I have a journal for just about everything I do, and it's such a helpful tool. I use it for tracking, but also to explore new ideas and break down my mistakes in a somewhat positive manner. The results of my work with Jared didn't happen overnight. It took a few months to really put them into play. Half the work is the advice he gives. The other half is up to you. Using what he gave me had a huge effect on my win rate. Even including those old hands, my win rate now is almost 12 BB per 100 over a million hands from $2, $4 all the way to $50, $100 heads up.
What progress looks like and how to keep it going. The first step when making progress is very often just better recognition of tilt as it happens. That doesn't mean you can control it yet, but better recognition is a critical first step to being able to gain control. Tilt is a complex puzzle that requires continual attention to its many pieces. Here are some other key markers to look for when evaluating progress. You spot the signs of tilt earlier and can remain in control more easily. You recover or feel normal faster after terrible sessions. It takes more tilt-inducing stuff to reach your threshold. It's easier to push through tilt and play longer. You're able to refocus and get back to playing well faster. The intensity of your anger is lower. Your greatest poker weaknesses have improved. It's also critical that you catalog improvements in the worst aspects of your tilt. If you are making progress, you have solid data to reference in your tilt profile. Emotions are so fluid that without having a written record, it can seem as though nothing has improved, when in fact many aspects of your tilt have. Too often players don't realize they are making progress and quit doing what was working. By seeing these small improvements, you'll gain confidence and extra motivation to keep working on your tilt. Plus, if you aren't improving, at least you have proof and can use the data you've gathered to make adjustments to your strategy. It's also important to remember, when making progress, there are often times when you take a few steps backwards. While they can be demoralizing, these are great opportunities to better understand the cause or causes of your tilt, so you're better prepared to prevent these missteps in the future. Since one definition of being crazy is doing the same thing time and time again, while expecting different results, try using all that tilt gives you, rather than just hoping it goes away. Running bad tilt. Going on tilt when running bad is so common that players often think it is an actual part of the game. While there are a few things worse in poker than sustained periods of bad luck, there are a few things better at helping you to identify mental and technical flaws in your game. In a twisted sort of way, having a bad run of cards is actually a good form of variance. Running bad is caused by a form of accumulated tilt that develops over days, weeks, months, or years of bad cards. It's a vicious cycle that builds momentum because variance makes you tilt, which makes you play badly, which makes you tilt more, which carries over to the next day, which means you'll probably tilt more quickly. Then when you do tilt again, you tilt harder, so your losses pile up even more, which makes you quit early. Then you tilt because you quit, so it weighs on your mind more, and you struggle sleeping. You wake up tired and feel like you have to play, but then you get screwed again, play bad, tilt again, make more mistakes, tilt some more, play a monster session to get unstuck, fall deeper into poker hell, think winning is the answer but you can't win, tilt more, can't stop playing, tilt more because you can't stop tilting, believe no one has run worse, want to quit the game, not really, you just need to win again. Sound familiar? Your pattern likely has differences since everyone's a bit unique. However, the commonalities among poker players who tilt when running bad are striking once you dig a bit deeper. The key thing to keep in mind is that while running bad, other types of tilts are triggered repeatedly in a short amount of time. If bad beats cause you to tilt, then during periods where you run bad, you'll tilt more because bad beats are happening more often, sometimes in quick succession. Having your aces cracked during a good run doesn't bother you because it doesn't happen that often. Plus, winning offsets any anger. A streak of bad variance doesn't cause tilt. It reveals the underlying reasons you tilt. If you aren't sure which of the other types of tilt running bad exposes, your thoughts can help you to implicate them. For example, this isn't fair. I'm due to run normal. I never win a flip. Equals, injustice tilt. How is it possible to lose like this again? Equals, hate losing tilt. I knew that. Damn it. How can I play so bad? Equals, mistake tilt. I'm too good of a player for this to happen. How can I keep losing this donkey? Equals, entitlement tilt. I'm gonna 3-bet this idiot. Who the F does he think he is? F you, I shove. Equals, revenge tilt. I'll stay here for an effing week if I have to win. Equals, desperation tilt. After identifying the types of tilt exposed by running bad, read the corresponding section to help you resolve it. Once the underlying causes of your tilt are corrected, you'll no longer tilt when running bad, no matter how many beats you take. A sustained bad run likely will still be frustrating, but you'll be able to be in control and play well through it. If you can't isolate any other types of tilt, or it seems much more like running bad is the real issue, you can take a broader approach. Variance is a difficult concept for players to truly wrap their heads around. While many get it, their knowledge of variance is often absent when their mind is on the edge of disaster. The reality is that knowledge of variance is a skill like any other, so it plays by the same rules. Only what's trained to the level of unconscious competence is guaranteed to show up under emotional pressure. Everything else isn't mastered yet, and it needs more work. Despite what you may already know about variance, you need to learn it better. Perhaps that's why players who come from mathematical or financial backgrounds tend to thrive in poker. They already have a bedrock of knowledge on the nature of variance. Although you can't actually control variance, you can gain greater control of your game by learning more about it. Dig deeper into the subtleties of variance to understand it beyond the obvious coolers, suckouts, and bad beats. Ideally, strengthening your skill for recognizing variance should be done on a regular basis. Having this skill allows you to know in the moment whether you were running bad, playing bad, or getting outplayed, which ultimately keeps the mind more stable. For more on the skill of recognizing variance, go to Chapter 8. Client Story. Matt Mbolt 1 Bolt. 3-6 to 5100 No Limit Hold'em. Drag the bar, coach.
Early on, I progressed really quickly, having been staked and coached by Dusty Schmidt. Having that opportunity also allowed me to move up in stakes rapidly, so in a few months, a bad losing day went from being a couple of $100 to $5,000. I ran pretty well all the way through the stakes. Every time I moved up, I ran good and immediately crushed. I didn't really have any real experience with negative variance until I settled into the mid to high stakes games. Now, I was subjected to losing days you can't even comprehend when you were 16 tabling $2, $4. The money was never that big of an issue. For me, it was losing. I thought it was way worse to lose $5,000 over the course of a week playing $3, $6 than it was to lose $80,000 in a day playing $50, $100. What Jared did was get me thinking about the right things, and he gave me a better understanding of why my brain did what it did. You naturally develop a tolerance for variance when you play high volume, but our talks sped up the process. It's so incredibly frustrating when you're running bad. There were times in 2010 I didn't even think I was playing poker. I thought I was playing a game called You Lose, where I showed up to the tables every day to lose. In my mind, the difference between a great player and a mediocre player is how they deal with bad runs. One thing he said that sticks out was, Michael Jordan never made a dime in the weight room. I was thinking of Jordan working his ass off in the weight room, not making any money. That's what the bad run is for me, working hard to lose as little as possible. It's not easy to do. On the mental side of poker, everything that is important for a successful player is almost the exact opposite of human nature. Nobody wants to quit playing when they are down money. They want to chase their losses, but want to quit real early when they're ahead. When a good poker player is running well, they want to stay on the table. All the conditions are right, and they're usually playing their A-plus game. When it's bad, they want to quit. Inexperienced players behave the opposite way. In my experience, everything that you instinctively think is right is wrong in the poker mental game. I was always bad at doing homework, so for a long time all I did with Jared was our sessions and not much else. I found that talking with him would help immensely, but after a while, without a session, things would start to slide because it wasn't really sinking in. So finally, I started filling out worksheets after my sessions where I evaluated my play, mental state, and also noticed how much variance played a part. This really helped me cope with downswings. Everyone naturally remembers all the spots they were unlucky and forgets all the spots they were lucky. Previously, I would think, wow, I'm the unluckiest person in the world. This is so unfair. I deserve to win more. I would think it's fine to be unlucky for a few days, as long as I'm lucky after, to make up for it. I know that's not rational, but in the moment you feel the massive sense of injustice and frustration that the luck didn't even out. Variance still sucks, but now I don't focus much on how unlucky I am. What's the point? I try to ignore results and focus on each playing hand as well as possible. I recently had a 90 buy-in downswing and have no doubt that I played during that time because I was tracking it closely the whole way.
Injecting logic. You don't control how you run, so why focus on it? You're a shitty psychic and can't predict when it's going to turn around. All you can do is keep playing well. Focus more on results than quality. Poker has evolved rapidly in the last decade. Part of that evolution is more players shifting their focus to the quality of their play rather than solely on results in the short run. Since it's a new concept to the poker community at large, previously some have been heard uttering they would rather be lucky than good. Players often complain that they know focusing only on results is wrong, but can't help it when they are running bad. Focusing more on the quality of your play is a skill, which means it plays by the rules of the ALM. However, players often incorrectly assume that making a results-oriented action, such as checking the cashier or getting annoyed at a bad beat, means no progress was made towards their focus on quality. Unless you are tracking progress with notes or have a photographic memory, it's impossible to accurately identify the subtle improvements in this skill. The smaller signs of improvement, such as increased recognition, checking results less frequently, having slightly less frustration, being more focused on quality, or reviewing hands more after a session, are often ignored when you're only looking for the end result. Every time you go through a period of running bad, it's an opportunity to prove just how much you've learned. Only when a skill consistently shows up under extreme emotional pressure can you prove what has been learned to the level of unconscious competence. Everything else is still in the process of being learned. Injecting logic. It's all skill, you're just not being rewarded right now. If it's all skill in the long run, then you need to focus on skill in the short run. Booking a win. As a sustained bad run wears on, the desire to lock up a winning session seems more and more like a good option. Bad runs can make it hard to remember what it's like to even win. So you book a win to get back the feeling of winning, make some money, and avoid the pain of another losing session. Booking a win, along with playing at lower stakes or fewer tables, is something that conventional poker wisdom advocates for handling running bad, especially when it's also affecting confidence. Well, is booking a win the right thing to do? Or should you just keep pressing on, knowing that as long as you're playing well, eventually it'll turn around? The answer is, it depends. Your job as a player is to evaluate risk. Here are two things to consider when making your decision. 1. Booking a win is a great option when your confidence is low and it's obvious that you are playing poorly. If you feel crushed and can't remember the last time you won at the tables, book the win. With your edge so low and perhaps even negative EV when on tilt, continuing to play is poker suicide. If booking a win can boost your confidence a bit and get you on the road to playing better, then do it. Just realize that booking a win does not solve your confidence problems. It's a temporary fix to problems that, if not addressed directly, will show back up the next time you run bad. Rather than having your confidence constantly go up and down alongside your results, read Chapter 8 and start trying to develop stable confidence. 2. Play a little longer if you've improved your tilt problem and proven you can control it. Pushing yourself to play slightly longer, even just 10 minutes, builds mental muscle, strengthens poker skills, increases confidence, and works to resolve the underlying cause of your tilt. Poker life balance. As the bad run wears on, the effects can start to bleed into your personal life. Poker becomes tougher to put out of your mind. Losses affect your mood, you snap at friends, you don't feel like doing much, and it's harder to focus, fall asleep, and enjoy your free time. For some players, it takes just one session before poker starts affecting them personally. For others, it takes longer. The way to keep poker out of your life is by creating a bubble around it. The following steps will help you to put poker down so you can move on with your life. Stopping poker from bleeding into your life requires direct action. Here's a strategy that's helped many players. Step 1. Vent on paper or the computer. Most people vent unproductively. They do it to other people or to themselves. Instead, do your venting on paper or the computer to get your thoughts about poker out of your head and to create a record of what's pissing you off. Basically, you're trying to create a description of what happened while it's fresh in your mind. You don't need to do anything with this information. You're just getting it out of your head with the intention of analyzing your tilt once you've calmed down and can take a more objective view. If you need to take a short break before you write, that's fine, though it's best if you can come back within a few hours. Step 2. Take notes on your poker or mental mistakes after the session. You don't need to do a hardcore analysis. Just organize the hands and capture some of the game flow so you can work on your weaknesses more accurately in the future. It's easier to do this when you've marked or identified hands during the session. Step 3. Take a break. At this point, you've done all that you can do. There's nothing more that you can do to help your game other than relax and give yourself a break. You can't change what happened, but you can use what happened to better understand the technical or mental problems in your game with an eye on becoming a better player in the future. You've done that in steps 1 and 2. Now your mind needs to relax, allowing it to recover before playing again. Step 4. Put poker out of your mind or put your thoughts down on paper. It's possible that thoughts about poker will continue to pop into your mind even after going through the first 3 steps. If they do, try to force them out of your mind by refocusing on what you're doing. If they persist, then take a few notes down so you can go on with your life. While thinking about poker right after getting destroyed is rarely what you want to do, it's a great way to stop your mind from grinding on poker at times you'd rather not. Predicting bad beats. A bad run is made worse when your mind starts predicting more losses. You get dealt aces and instantly assume they'll get cracked. Spike middle set on the flop, and of course your opponent's check raise means they have top set. Be a 20-to-1 favorite going into the river, and you know a suckout is coming. It's just a foregone conclusion that you're going to lose. You're just playing to find out how it's going to happen this time. For some players, the accuracy of their predicting power makes it seem as if bad beats are happening because they're thinking one is coming. This illusion is created by not realizing the mind makes predictions based on recent events. The mind has the ability to anticipate the future just as the body does. When your body is moving, it's constantly making predictions so it's prepared. One example where this prediction goes wrong happens when walking up a flight of stairs and not paying attention to how many steps there actually are. If you anticipate a step that isn't there, you'll practically trip because your body's prediction was wrong. Whether in reference to the body or mind, a prediction is based solely on the information available at that time. When running bad, the mind is drawing from a pool of data that is heavily skewed towards losing. Naturally, your mind predicts more losing. On the flip side, when you're running well, the same thing happens in the other direction. You see nothing but more winning in the future because there's far more recent data to suggest it'll continue. Predicting more losing is only a problem if 1. You start playing a losing strategy in a desperate attempt to avoid taking losses. 2. You believe that your predictions are an actuality of what the future holds. Unless you have real psychic power, why are you listening to this book if you do? Believing that your mind is controlling results is an illusion. This illusion of control is subtle, and there is an underlying issue that needs to be addressed directly. Resolve it, and predicting bad beats will no longer add an additional layer of anger or affect your decision-making when running bad. For more on the illusion of control, go to Chapter 8. Injecting logic. You control how you respond to the cards, not what cards are dealt. Resetting your mind. As a bad run wears on, having to deal with more tilt-inducing stuff, triggers, also wears on your mind. When the frequency of your triggers is typical, your mind can be reset after a good night's sleep, a night out with friends, or a good workout. Unfortunately, when tilt keeps building up day after day, it becomes harder and harder to show up to play with a clear mind. The tilt from the day before lingers and makes it more likely that you'll tilt again. Whereas previously it may have taken 5 or more bad beats to make you just slightly frustrated, just 1 now sends you to the edge of tilt, and 2 throws you completely over. The reason you accumulate this extra anger is because your brain has too much of it to digest. The extra anger weighs on your mind and eventually can force you to stop playing poker in order to clear your mind. For some players, that means taking a few days off, which can be tilting in itself. If you don't want to take time off, you need to clear out the extra anger that the brain can't process fast enough on its own. You can do that by 1. Following the steps to keep poker out of your life. 2. Develop a cool-down routine using the suggestions in Appendix 1. 3. Use any of the steps to resolve accumulated emotion in Chapter 4. Resetting your mind during a bad run isn't just a nice idea. It's a major part of what keeps you playing well while getting hammered. Injustice tilt. You've been rivered, coolered, and bad-beated for the umpteenth time today, and your head is about to explode. You can't believe how unlucky you got. Bad players suck out in the worst possible spot. Regulars run you over. You tilt when you think how much more you could have won. The poker gods have cursed you. You don't deserve this, and you wonder when you're going to get your fair share of good luck. Logic says that variance makes poker profitable. Just be patient, and eventually things will turn in your favor. But the scales of poker justice have tilted against you, and you tilt trying to fight against them. As the name implies, Injustice Tilt is about fairness, equity, and justice. While it may seem as if the answer is to simply accept the realities of poker, it's clearly not that simple, or this problem would have already been solved. So as with other types of tilt, finding the missing logic is key to unlocking a lasting solution. Answer these questions to help you find the missing logic causing your Injustice Tilt. Does it always feel like you never get your fair share of luck, or that you're always getting screwed? Does it seem as if the money you've lost is being taken from you? Is a bad beat, cooler, or suck out worse when it happens against a fish or a regular? What are the situations when bad luck really gets to you? Are you jealous or resentful of other players who you think run better than you? When variance is really bad, do you wish poker wasn't this way, or that you could somehow control variance? For many players, at the core of Injustice is a feeling that they aren't getting what they think is fair. This begs the question, how do you know what's fair? The mind figures it out by considering the following: variance or luck, the quality of your skill, the quality of your opponent's skill. Quite obviously, these three factors together determine your edge in the game, but accurately calculating them isn't easy. The players who do that well have a real skill in being able to spot subtle variance, a mistake on their part, or a solid move made by their opponents. While all players have some skill in each area, their skill levels vary dramatically. Right now, in poker rooms and online, there are players who don't believe the math. They think King-King is a better hand pre-flop than Ace-Ace, or think they always hit their flushes when dealt clubs. Their opinion, of course, is influenced by the hands they've played so far in their career, and not by statistics. What these players show us, other than they are great opponents to have on your right, is that besides playing badly, bad players also make errors in how they interpret results. They overestimate their own skill, and they have very little understanding about variance or odds, and they think they are better than you or the other regulars at the table. Errors in interpreting results aren't the exclusive domain of terrible players. Every player has a filter that calculates the influence of variance, their own skill, and their opponent's skill. This filter guides the interpretation of the outcome of a hand, session, tournament, sit and go, etc. It's like a sorting system: variance in this pile, the quality of play in that pile, and opponent's play in the last pile. As the filter sorts the results, totals in each pile automatically give a player a sense of their edge. Injustice Tilt develops from fundamental weaknesses or errors in a player's ability to filter results, and that ultimately skews what they believe is fair. Assuming you're better. Some players falsely assume that losing happens because their opponents were lucky, rather than thinking they got outplayed. This happens when they have a stronger ability to recognize the quality of their own play, rather than their opponents. If you can't understand what your opponents are doing, it's logical that you wouldn't give them enough credit and would believe you're better than them. The subtle bias means that, rather than objectively looking at who's a better player, you automatically assume it's you. If calculating each of these factors, variance, your skill, opponent's skill, was simple, Injustice Tilt wouldn't exist. Players would easily know what is fair. When you know what is fair, even if you lose, it doesn't feel unjust. Sometimes just the uncertainty of not knowing is enough to drive you mad. While it's impossible to know definitively in the short term what is fair, there is a skill to it that can improve with work and experience. At first, it may not seem as if you can improve your understanding of variance beyond your aces getting cracked by fives, getting coolered, losing set over set, or constantly running into the top end of your opponent's range. Understanding variance is a skill that has already improved from when you first started playing, which means you can continue to understand it even more. For some advice on how to increase your understanding of variance, go to Chapter 8. Justice may be blind and impartial in the courtroom, but you are not. In addition to errors in calculating variance, your skill, and your opponent's skill, Injustice Tilt is exaggerated by the biases that cloud your judgment and tip the scales of justice to automatically rule against you. In other words, you take only small samples of evidence to determine what is fair, and this has a direct impact on how you react at the table. The major biases in poker are covered in the remainder of this chapter. Terrible at spotting good variance. Typically, players remember bad luck more than good luck, especially under emotional pressure. Rarely will you hear them tell stories of how they sucked out, but hearing a bad beat story is often unavoidable. Remembering and focusing more on bad luck creates a biased perspective for the simple reason that when you add focus to something, you learn it better. So bad luck gets more attention and thus stands out more easily in your mind. Basically, you're really skilled at spotting bad luck and terrible at spotting good luck. To make matters worse, not only does this extra focus on bad luck bias your perception overall, when under emotional pressure from a bad run, it's all you remember. So now a statement such as, "I never get lucky," makes total sense because bad luck is all you see. In that moment, you truly believe that you never have good luck, and that happens primarily because you're so bad at recognizing it. More than is fair. When you assume that good luck is actually more a result of your play, and or assume your mistakes are actually bad luck, and you're wrong, these errors bias the scales of poker justice to make variance seem unfair when it's not. The next two figures help to illustrate this point. Figure 1, balanced scale. Imagine a balanced scale holding good variance on one side and bad variance on the other side. On this scale, there are equal amounts of good and bad variance, so the scale is balanced. Now also imagine two piles near the scale, a pile of poker skill and a pile of poker mistakes. Figure 2, unbalanced scale. Now imagine that same scale and piles of poker skill and poker mistakes, only in this figure, the scale is tilted towards bad variance for two reasons. One, good variance has been taken off the scale and added to the pile of poker skill. And two, poker mistakes have been added to the bad variance side of the scale. In figure 1, your view of variance is balanced or neutral. You recognize your skill, your mistakes, as well as the skills and mistakes of your opponents. Figure 2 shows how injustice tilt develops. First, if winning actually happens because of good luck, but you believe that it was your skill, then some good luck is taken off the scale. Second, if your mistakes cause you to lose, but the loss was presumed to have been caused by bad luck, then some bad luck is added to the scale. By attributing good luck to your skill and your mistakes to bad luck, you believe variance is against you. So in both cases, bad luck appears to happen more frequently, and you tilt believing you're getting screwed, when really you're mentally screwing yourself. You can imagine when this bias plays out repeatedly over time. It would seem quite reasonable that you'd eventually believe that you were cursed, or that variance was unfair if a significant chunk of your winnings were attributed to your skill, but your losses were not. Instead, your losses were attributed to bad luck. In a way, you can consider this to just be a basic math problem, but since each factor is hard to accurately measure, it's far from basic. This is why there's edge to be gained by getting better at objectively evaluating your game, your opponent's game, and variance. Sure, it's hard to identify good luck at times, but as mentioned above, part of the reason is because you don't attribute winning to good luck, and you're far more skilled at spotting bad luck. This raises the question, why are you trying to make winning in the short run a result of your skill rather than good luck? It's because you want to believe you're as good a player as you think, regardless of whether you actually are that good. This is a confidence problem, and subconsciously the mind knows this pseudo-confidence or overconfidence isn't stable. So during periods of sustained bad play, you'll question your game, lose confidence, and may lose motivation. Refer to Chapter 8 for more. Here are a couple of suggestions for correcting the imbalance in what you believe is fair. Short term, improve your ability to spot positive variance and your mistakes. Doing so balances your perspective about variance. Also refer to Chapter 8 for more about developing the skills of recognizing variance, your skill, and your opponent's skill. Long term, go back through your poker career, perhaps even your personal, sports, or business life, and identify instances of good luck that at the time you thought happened more because of your skill than variance. Also look for instances when you thought you were getting screwed, but you were actually making mistakes. Correcting the bias you have now is easier when you correct your past biases. You can't change what happened in the past, but changing how you look at the past provides a more accurate and stable view of the present. Injecting logic. Poker doesn't care what you think is fair. Injustice, tilt, opportunity. Looking for opportunity in a pile of tilt isn't just about putting a positive spin on things to make you feel better. It's also about finding something of real value that can make you stronger mentally. What are the opportunities? 1. If you can learn to better handle bad luck today, you'll have an edge over other players. Plus, it gives you a lead on what can be learned tomorrow. When you have a lead, it means you can be working on something else that takes your game even farther and keeps you ahead while others are busy learning how to deal with injustice. 2. How you handle bad luck can predict how you will handle good luck. Improving the underlying cause or causes of your injustice tilt also improves how you handle a great run. Maintaining balance when it comes to variance is important for more than just bad luck. There are a number of players who rolled through the games during the Chris Moneymaker boom that went bust. They essentially won the poker lottery and couldn't handle it, much the same as people who win the real lottery and go broke soon after. Wishing poker wasn't this way. When getting to the bottom of why bad luck causes players to tilt, many have admitted they wish poker didn't have so much variance. Logically, they know variance is a big part of what makes poker so profitable, but that logic isn't enough to satisfy the wish. In fact, there have even been instances when high-profile figures in the game have attempted to create low or no variance versions of poker. These attempts have gone down like lead balloons because variance is the very thing that makes poker profitable and fun. The old adage, be careful what you wish for, is true in this case. If you got your wish, and the results in the short run were 100% connected to which player was better, what would happen? Since poker is as much a war of the perception of skill as it is of actual skill, action from weaker players would dry up and poker would become chess. Assuming that's all true, and many of you already know it is, what's the wish really about? Wishing poker didn't have variance is another way of saying, I can't handle the emotion variance causes me. If variance didn't cause you to tilt, you'd love that it exists. Since you can't control variance, the only solution is to 1. Get better at understanding it. For more, go to Chapter 8. 2. Improve how you handle it emotionally. Handling variance better means you accept it. Acceptance happens naturally after learning why you don't want your wish of zero variance to come true. Desire to control variance. The desire to control variance, though it may seem illogical, is deep down something many players want and wish could happen. Often this comes out in small ways, such as calling for the card you need, avoiding looking at the flop so as not to jinx the hand, or standing up from your seat during a race. None of this influences the turn of a card, yet you feel it may help in some way. Other times, the desire to control variance is evident in actions such as berating someone who has just sucked out on you, or going so far as getting on your knees and praying like Jerry Yang did, successfully, at the World Series of Poker main event. Though it may not seem like a big deal, just wishing you could control variance means you're giving up control. Let's assume that you actually have run worse than expected, and for far longer than the math says is likely. It's completely reasonable to be pissed off, but the question is whether that frustration or anger affects the quality of your play. Often players with the underlying desire to control variance end up losing control of their game. Since you can't control variance and can only control how you respond to it, the goal is to build up more mental muscle so that you can respond effectively. Of course, it's hard. Variance is a major reason that poker is so challenging. Resolve the desire to control variance and instead focus on being in more control of your game. Injecting logic. You can't control variance, but you can understand it better. You can't control the cards, you can only control how you play. An excuse not to learn. It doesn't take long to find a player who's avoided working on their game because they assume their losses were due to variance. When it seems like, there's no point, I'm just going to get screwed again, or if you're an online player obsessed with being down in all-in EV, it's understandable why you wouldn't put in the time. If you believe the reason you're losing is solely due to bad luck, it's actually illogical for you to work on your game, especially when it's much easier to complain. Frankly, it's easier to complain about bad luck than actually trying to improve because there's less to lose. If you try to improve and still lose, that means you got beat or beat yourself. Both are tough pills to swallow and can make you feel like you failed, wasted your time, or are a terrible player. Blaming luck essentially helps you avoid these feelings. The risk of complaining about bad luck is that you tend to ignore your mistakes or the details of how you're being outplayed. This information is essential to improving as a player. By complaining, you shield the reality of your game from yourself. The momentum of this pattern means that the longer it goes on, the more your real edge decreases, which increases variance, which means more bad luck, which means more complaining and less working. This vicious cycle is going to continue until you face the reality of your game and do the work to improve. There also may be other mental game issues you're protecting yourself from, such as fear of failure, loss of confidence, and mistake tilt. If that's the case, deal directly with those issues as well. Injecting logic. Stop complaining. There's always something to learn. Client story. Barry Carter. Mid-stakes sit-and-goes and cash games. Poker journalist.
I had been working as a poker journalist for about 5 years when I met Jared. Like a lot of people who stick with poker, I ran pretty well in my first few years. But in 2009, I had a pretty brutal downswing that crippled my game. I had heard of Jared and seen his videos, but there was part of me that thought he was probably going to fill my head with a load of visualize yourself not getting bad beats crap I previously associated with self-help material. But that aside, I was feeling pretty desperate, so I really wanted to try him before I bought a self-help book. I approached him with essentially three issues. First of all, I felt I was cursed. I really believed I ran worse than anyone else and was keen to prove it to anyone who would listen. Second, I had developed a terrible case of risk aversion. Finally, I really struggled to work on my game away from the table, and it was an area where I considered myself lazy. You know that's a crock of shit, right? Jared told me. I was shocked. Wasn't he supposed to be making me feel like I was Phil Ivey and that I could do anything? Can a mental game coach talk to people like that? Weren't we supposed to start with Buddhist chants or something? Jared asked me if I could see how all three issues were clearly linked to each other. I could kind of see the link between feeling cursed and being risk-averse, but not at all about how being lazy and studying away from the table was linked. What's the point on working on your game if you're cursed? He asked me. There is no such thing as lazy. You're simply not motivated to work on your game. You have decided that because you are cursed, you have an excuse not to learn, so you don't. All of a sudden, it seemed so simple. How did I not notice this before? His opening line calling me out on my crock of shit will always stick with me. It was pretty much then that I realized Jared was the real deal. I've always considered myself to be very self-aware, so for him to have identified why I wasn't working on my game so quickly and clearly had me hooked on the mental game, hence my involvement in this book. It took a long time to fully crack my reluctance to work on my game, but over the next few months, my own case helped to highlight how most mental game issues are interlinked. My feeling that I was cursed was stopping me from studying, but my risk aversion played a role in it as well. In one particular session, I mentioned to Jared that for me, the image of success in poker is the image of a tournament winner posing for cameras holding their two winning hole cards in front of a mountain of chips. I guess I should stop playing cash games and sit-and-goes and start playing tournaments, I joked. Never joke during a session with Jared Tendler. He doesn't let it go. He probed me on why, if my image of success is winning a tournament, do I hardly ever play them? Lots of Jedi mind tricks later, he made me realize risk aversion was stopping me from working on my game this time because I was equating success with something I wasn't even trying to achieve, so I had a perfect excuse when I didn't achieve it. This ultimately led me to the core of why I wasn't working on my game. I didn't want to put myself in a position where I had to be accountable if I lost. Being a poker journalist, I had to report on successful players every day, and I'm friends with a lot of pros. What I really feared was humiliating myself in front of them, so I took the low-risk route of not working on my game, blaming bad luck, and not leaving myself open to ridicule. Playing out the fear like this gave me an endpoint. I knew that the absolute worst thing I could experience if I started to work on my game was ridicule. I also realized from the whole experience that I wasn't nearly as good a player as I thought, which was a good thing, because it meant I could improve. Thanks to some pretty solid learning concepts like the adult learning model and Inchworm, I now know that there is always something I can work on, and I have ways of noticing small gradual improvements no matter how bad it gets.
Bad beat stories. Bad beat stories are a prime example of injustice tilt, and are a part of the game many players would be happy to see gone. Players hate being told these stories, yet after a sick beat, are compelled to tell one too. Why do players who knowingly hate to tell bad beat stories continue to do so? They're looking for confirmation that it was as terrible as they think. It's a form of competition to see who has the worst story. They're looking for someone to blame. It's a reason not to work on their game. They're looking for pity, sympathy, or commiseration. Sometimes they do make pretty great stories, in a sick way. For some players, resolving the need to tell these stories is a result of addressing other parts of this chapter. If this isn't the case, figure out why you tell bad beat stories using the list above and fix it. Jealousy. Injustice tilt is a form of tilt that can develop and accumulate without even playing a hand. The feeling that you're not getting your fair share of good fortune can also come from seeing other players get more than what you think is fair. Some successful players are thought to simply run extremely hot, and little or no consideration is given to their ability or how hard they work on their game. For instance, some believe the success of such big names as Gus Hansen is due to luck and not at all to skill. So when you think of the millions of dollars he's won and titles he holds, it seems incomprehensible and unfair how much he wins compared to you. Jealousy can also happen when a close poker friend, who you think you're just as good as, is making a real name for himself. Seeing what he's winning makes it seem as if you should be having the same level of success. To start making improvements on the issue of jealousy, answer the following questions. 1. What do others have that you wish you had? 2. What would having it mean for you? 3. What more can you be doing that you aren't already? There's always something, even if it's just having patience. 4. What have you achieved that hasn't been celebrated enough? Your answers provide insight into what needs more focus, allowing you to be less focused on the fortunes of others. Also, since players with stable confidence have fewer problems with jealousy, read Chapter 8. Hate losing tilt. Losing is a reality in any competitive environment. This is especially true in poker, where variance is built into the fabric of the game. Nowhere other than poker does the better player, even the best in the world, lose so often because of variance. How you lose a hand matters, but it matters less than the simple reality that you lost. Lose one hand, and your frustration spikes like a mild tremor on the Richter scale. Then as losses pile up, frustration steadily builds into tilt, unless you lose in particularly vicious ways, and then a full-blown tilt quake happens instantly. Most everyone reading this section knows that variance is a part of the game. You'd like to be friends with it, but deep down you hate it. Logically, you know that variance is part of what makes poker so profitable, but since that logic isn't enough to stop this kind of tilt, there must be more pieces to this puzzle. When logic isn't enough, there usually are some other nuggets of information that aren't being accounted for and require a little digging to discover. The important first question to ask is, why do you hate losing? Is it the feeling? Losing often feels terrible, can go on for a while, and even affects other aspects of your life. Is it the money? Winning money is ultimately how you're measured in poker, so it makes sense why you'd hate losing it. No one's ever going to pump their fist to celebrate losing a big pot or busting out of a tournament. But the following sections can at least help you make peace with losing. Competitiveness. No matter what you're competing for, being competitive is a great trait. It's one shared by many successful poker players, athletes, and business people. Competition naturally brings out a strong desire to win, and that's a great thing. Being competitive in poker is not inherently a problem. Wanting to win money, beat your opponents, and profit every session are solid goals. They just aren't entirely in your control in the short run. Everyone agrees that there are situations where you lose to bad players that are actually extremely profitable spots in the long run. Logically, you understand this, but in the moment when you lose, it's hard to see the bigger picture. To find out why losing is such a problem, it's often easier to first look at what you gain from winning besides money. Every time you play poker, there's more on the line than just money. It's worth taking some time to define what's on the line for you. Here are some examples. Being better than your opponents. Ability to pay the bills. Achievement and accomplishment of poker goals. Respect from people who think you're wrong for even playing poker. Confidence in your game. Ability to move up in stakes. Others' opinions of your game. The time, energy, and work you put into the game. The better chance of retiring early. There's more than just money on the line when you play. You're competing for what's on this list and more. It's as if each one is a bet along with the actual money on the table. When you lose, it's not just the money that's gone. You've also lost confidence, respect from others, progress toward your goals, and anything else on your list. You hate losing because you're competing for so much more than you realize. Losing also feels worse when you assume more losses will happen in the future, and it feels even worse when you can't imagine ever winning again. This prediction of the future fans the downward spiral of tilt. When you believe more losses are to come in the future, you have more to be pissed off about in the present. Solving this type of tilt begins with a better definition of the real problem. Being competitive is not the problem. Being frustrated at losing is not the problem. You have goals, there's a lot on the line, and being frustrated when it doesn't go your way means you care about what you're investing into the game. Plus, frustration at low levels can be fuel to perform and can motivate you to work harder away from the table. Successful athletes in all major sports channel their frustration in this way all the time, but that can only happen when the excess layers that turn it into anger, hate, or rage are removed. Together with reviewing other sections in this chapter, consider the following to help you define the cause and the solution to your hatred of losing. 1. Define winning. Since winning is about more than just money, take a closer look at other things that are in play and define what winning means for each one. This is especially important for things that are harder to calculate than money, such as respect, effort, and achievement. For example, how are you going to know when you can actually move up in stakes? Winning means you have a 60 buy-in bankroll. When will others respect you for playing poker? Winning means you've supported yourself for 5 years, and if they don't respect you then, it's their problem. How do you know if you're better than your opponents? Winning means having a better win rate or head-to-head record over a large sample. Write out the definition of what winning means for everything that's on the line when you play. Then reread these to remind yourself of them before you play. The tendency is to automatically assume that when you lose, you're also losing along all of these lines too. But that may not be true. You may actually be winning and not even realize it. 2. Drop the assumption that losing will continue. The assumption that you will lose is a mental flaw that means you believe your predictions for the future will always be 100% accurate. They won't be. To counteract this, do the following at a time when you're relaxed or at least not pissed off. Look at the high and low points of your results at different points in your career, such as 6 months ago, 2 years ago, and even farther back. Doing this helps you gain perspective. When losing in the past, you assumed losing would continue, but it didn't. Remind yourself of this fact regularly, and you'll take away a layer of frustration that otherwise would accumulate. Injecting logic. Don't let variance beat you by forcing you to play badly. Money lost. Another reason you hate losing is your belief that the money lost is gone forever. This is especially true for heads-up players after getting hit and run. Rather than just thinking of money as something that's won or lost each time you play, consider it to be an investment in your edge that yields a return over time. Thinking in this way may sound logical, but the fact that you are tilting when losing money proves you're more concerned about short-term losses than the bigger picture. Rather than thinking in terms of money won or lost, take a lesson from the business world. In many businesses, there's a major difference between the money being held and the money that's actually earned as income. For example, a retail store offering a refund within 30 days realizes the income of a sale after the 30-day period is over, not on the day of the sale. Until that point, the money is just being held and is not considered income. In poker, if you believe all of the money you won in the short run is yours, especially on a great run of cards, then predictably you'll get pissed off when poker takes back what you really didn't earn. Often the seeds of hating to lose are planted when you assume more of what you won to be income. Unlike a retail business, poker makes it difficult to know if money lost is truly gone forever, or whether it's just an investment in your edge. To counteract this, some players try thinking about their earn rate. If they've lost a buy-in over an hour, they instead have made their average hourly rate of X dollars per hour. If thinking in these terms helps, then keep doing it. Just be sure to leave some wiggle room in your mind so that by the time you figure out what you've actually earned over that period, you aren't disappointed if your income is lower than expected. Some players believe using an hourly rate is a way to rationalize losing. In small samples, it is, but the larger the size of the sample your earn rate is based on, the more reliable it becomes. Whether you use it or not, at a minimum, don't assume money won in the short run is yours until you can prove you've earned it. Injecting logic. The money on the table is an investment in your edge. If you lost making profitable plays, losing is temporary as long as you keep playing well and improving. Client story. Jordan, I'm so lucky, O. Morgan. Tournament player and mid-stakes no limit hold'em. Full Tilt Poker Red Pro.
When I met Jared, I already had a lot of tournament success and a sponsorship deal with Full Tilt. I wanted to get into cash games, but was having trouble not tilting. I was chasing losses, jumping limits, and basically being a degenerate gambler. If I lost, I would tell myself, I have to get that money back. I have to get even. I can do this. I have control. But it was the long run, not short run, that I controlled. And when I realized that, a lot of my problems were solved. Improvement came quite instantly. Just understanding what was going on in my head solved a lot of the problem. Incorporating a warm-up before I played and journaling at the end also helped me to identify my own tilt patterns, which made it easier to deal with them sooner and more effectively. Now, I am calmer, more of a realist, less of an idealist, and understand that these things have to happen in poker.
Injecting logic.
I can't always play perfectly. I can only play my best. Even though it doesn't seem like it right now, I am beating the games. But I don't have much of an edge when tilting.
Believing you can win every hand. Though logically it's hard for a player to admit to believing they can win every hand or every session, there are many who actually do. It sounds illogical because of course they know better. Variance would never allow such a thing to happen. Knowing that this belief is illogical still isn't enough to stop players from clinging to the idea that one day they'll become so good they'll never lose. Poker does a great job of feeding this belief. When you run hot, the game seems like an ATM dispensing out money. It starts to really seem as if you can win every hand. It feels great to win and to play that well, especially when the run goes on longer. Winning that much brings out dreams of what it would be like to run so good that you never lose. In a similar way to the dreams that people have about winning the lottery, images emerge in your mind of what you would do with the money, or what it would mean for your life. Of course, this is poker, not the lottery. While a few recent World Series of Poker main event winners seem to have won poker's version of the lottery, if it were possible for you or anyone else to be that good, poker would cease to be as profitable. The fact that you can't win every single time is precisely why you can find games where you have an edge, with inferior players willing to play you. Poker isn't an ATM. It's more like a slot machine calibrated to pay out your edge, minus the rake. Earning your edge means you have to pay out a lot of what you take in, sometimes in dramatic fashion. If running well makes you think it's easy to win money in poker, then you'll hate when you inevitably lose, because losing destroys your dream. The solution to this problem has to include improving how you handle winning, as much as improving how you handle losing. That begins with ditching the dream of easy money. Also try the following to eliminate the belief that you can win every hand or every session. Preparation. Reinforce your focus on making good decisions, reading the actions, and anything else needed to play well. Remember why losing is an important part of poker, and why money saved from good laydowns is as good as money won. While this may become repetitive, mastery of the solution eventually means the flaw is resolved and no longer requires your attention. Until that point, keep working at it. Performance. If losing one hand causes even minor frustration, inject logic after each loss. Doing so prevents emotion from accumulating as much and delays tilt. Since winning is also part of the problem, when emotions start to get too positive, inject logic then too. Injecting logic. It's not possible to win every hand. Your focus needs to be on playing every hand well. Evaluation. Whether this problem shows up from winning or losing, use the mental hand history to reinforce the breakdown of faulty logic and the buildup of the correction. Break your wish of easy money. Prove to yourself why you don't want this wish to come true. Then each time you have dreams about it, redirect your thoughts or actions to something productive that you can actually achieve. Lost skill. Players often fall into a trap where they believe that losing money also means their skill has disappeared. When losing and on tilt, they suddenly think they suck. This is just an illusion of the mind. Skills learned to the level of unconscious competence are owned and never disappear, even when on tilt. This illusion arises for three reasons. 1. Equating money with skill. If you lose money, and money equals skill, then you instantly suck when you lose. You'll also hate losing, because when other players are winning, you believe they can suddenly be that much better. If it's possible for your skill to suddenly disappear, their skill can instantly appear. 2. Unconscious competence skills are unconscious. By definition, you don't have to think about them, and consequently, they are taken for granted. 3. Skills in the process of being learned don't show up when on tilt and can seem to have disappeared, possibly forever, along with the rest of your game. Here's how to break this illusion. 1. Improve the skill of recognizing variance, your skill, and your opponent's skill. Then when you lose, you can determine how you actually played, rather than just assuming you suck.